He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Big city waking up this Wednesday morning to a troubling reality. We haven't even gotten this summer in the city. The fact is, if we don't turn things around, our proud distinction of being America's safest big city might be in jeopardy. Given the dramatic increase in shootings and homicides this year, through May, we suffered 98 homicides by gunfire. It's up from 69 homicides during that same period in 2014. So 98 shot dead so far this year, 98 compared to 69 last year. And that marks the second year in a row, both under Mayor Bill de Blasio, that homicides by gunfire have increased. It also marks the second year, as you know, that the cops have been restricted from using what I still believe is the highly effective tactic for keeping guns off the streets, SQF, stop, question, and frisk, SQF. So in about an hour and a half at 11:30 this morning, demonstrators carrying body bags, we hear, will be descending on City Hall to demand that the mayor reverse his administration's restrictions on stop and frisk. Even as the mayor is responding defensively, I'll get to the mayor and his comments in a moment. We're joined right now by the Brooklyn community activist, Tony Herbert, who will be protesting this morning. Tony, welcome. Tell me exactly what you have planned.
Hey, Geraldo, thank you so much. So, you know, basically the bottom line is, first and foremost, this mayor has not been very forthcoming with opening up the doors for us to have an opportunity to dialogue. We talked months ago saying, hey, look, you know, we've got a problem and the summer months are getting close. We need to sit down. We have a plan and we need to engage the entire city in this plan. That has not happened. Yet now we have bodies dropping on the ground. So what we're going to do is we're going to deliver the coffins that those bodies would normally be put in. We're going to deliver them to City Hall.
So how many people do you expect, and do you literally, will you literally be carrying coffins?
Well, we didn't call a massive protest. We wanted primarily just to be able to disseminate the information via a press conference, denouncing this violence, denouncing the insensitivity of the mayor, and put ourselves in a better position to see if he wants to talk, we're ready to talk. If not, these body bags and these coffins will follow him, for the most part. We reached out to several of our ministers who were reaching out to their relationships with the funeral callers that actually have the undaunting task of dealing with, you know, burying these young people. So, it all depends. Who shows out? These are professional people. I don't expect too many of them to come out because they work. But, you know, the message is going to be clear. We won't be standing there alone. There will be a coffin or two.
All right. Now, Tony, stand by. I'm going to play what the mayor said yesterday, then I want your response. Here's Mayor de Blasio yesterday.
New York City continues to be an extraordinarily safe city. I have a lot of faith in the men and women of the NYPD. I know they will turn the tide this time just like they did last year.
What's up? What's up, Tony? Is the mayor right, or are you right?
I share in the work that our NYPD is doing, but they can't do it by themselves, and they say it clearly. We want to work with the community so that we can stop this craziness.
What's the mayor doing wrong, Tony?
Yeah, he's just talking to one segment of the community. He's not talking to everybody, and that doesn't help him to get in the doors he needs to get in to stop this craziness.
All right, hold on, Tony. One of the segments he's talking to is the Reverend Al Sharpton, who is fighting against any inclination to bring back tactics like stop and frisk. Here's Reverend Sharpton.
I'm very disturbed by the uptick. And I think that to say the only way that we can govern in a civilized society is to rob people of their civil liberties and lock everybody up is absolutely crazy.
All right, so what do you say to Reverend Sharpton, Tony?
Well, Rev is right, but let me just put it in this frame of mind. The bottom line is we need stop and frisk because there's nothing else that's deterring individuals.
Amen.
They're not deterring them, you know. But let's be very clear. We don't want anybody's rights violated.
Of course we don't want people's rights violated. But, you know, under Mayor Giuliani, who's going to be joining us at 11 this morning, and then later under Michael Bloomberg, Yeah, Ray Kelly, police commissioner, and I don't put down Bill Breton at all. I think he's a great professional. But Ray, you know, he had this tried and true tough guy approach to keeping the city safe. He had no tolerance, broken windows, no tolerance, you know, urination, graffiti, turnstile right. jumping, etc. They were prosecuted as crimes. Hundreds of thousands of mostly young black and brown men from high crime neighborhoods stopped, questioned. And if there was reasonable suspicion that a crime was committed, they were frisked. Do you have a problem with that?
You know what? I think we need to continue that kind of policing in our community. That leads to a lot of the issues that we're talking about. But at the end of the day as well, this liberal, this very liberal approach and hands-off kind of hinders the police from doing their job. You know, if you're not a criminal out there, then you have nothing to worry about. But if you're out there committing a crime, then you should worry about stop and frisk.
You know, I looked up a statistic after I heard from Commissioner Breton and the mayor that this big escalation in gun violence is restricted to 15 of the city's 77 police precincts. There's a computation, you know, they say Black Lives Matter, and they certainly do. All lives matter. But if you're black in New York City, you're almost 25 times more likely to be shot than a white person. What does that say to you, Tony?
Well, one, it scares me because I have teenagers and young men, you know, that I'm raising in my household that I have to constantly pick up the phone and ask, hey, how are you doing? Where are you at? And give them instruction on where not to be so that they don't put themselves in that position. And how many parents have to do that today? So in reality, there is a problem. It needs to be addressed. And the mayor can't just keep doing this blindly with politics. He needs to meet with the community. And that's what he needs to do. And the community isn't one person who he thinks represents the entire African-American community.
Oh, but here, Tony, I want to be very specific. Tony Herbert is my guest, the Brooklyn-based community activist. Do you think that the mayor's policy toward proactive policing is resulting in more black lives being lost in New York City, Tony?
Yes.
So that it is a dramatic answer. I want you to just now give me the next sentence. Do you think that Mayor de Blasio is because of his what? First of all, the mayor is a good person, a good-hearted person. I mean, I think he has a lovely family. I want him to succeed.
Yes.
So he must see what we see. What is he not getting?
You know, I think that he has a bad management team that just are not getting the memo to him appropriately. That problem, you know, exists quite frankly with the mere mention of the fact we've met with his community affairs people who I don't think is communicating this message to him clearly.
And the message has to be that New Yorkers want their children to live to see their 20s, for goodness sake.
Exactly. And that's why we're here.
So what about this ghetto civil war that's going on, Tony? What about this gangs and crews? I haven't heard about this kind of stuff since the 60s.
It's all economically driven. These young people have nothing to do. They have nowhere to go. You're pulling resources. You're shutting down community centers. You're not creating job opportunities. You have all this development going on, and none of them have a damn job in this stuff.
But what about the Bloods and the Crips and all that? Are they taking over for these amateurs? What's going on?
I don't know if they're taking over per se, but I can tell you this much, and rest assured, we're not allowing anybody and whatnot in a gang or whatever the case may be to rule our city, and that's not happening, and we'll work with anybody to denounce that. At the same time, we're saying clearly, you know, we want this kind of violence off our streets, but but you can't ignore it and just downplay it and be insensitive to the fact that there are some of us out here, like you call us fearmongers, when we're the ones telling you what's going on and we're giving the information to the police and sharing the, you know, diatribe on where this violence will be prevalent, and you turn around and tell us, oh, you know, it's not that serious or that urgent for you to sit down and talk to us. That's a problem.
So fear-mongering, so easy to level that charge. It's like racism and anti-Semitism. You just throw the charge out there. You put the person getting the charge on the defensive. It deflects attention from the problem. I think it's really low. It's a low way to deal with it. I think you're anything but a fearmonger, Tony. I think you're a prophet, if anything. And maybe give us a call when you get down to City Hall.
I appreciate it, because.
All right, Tony Herbert, thank you very much. 60 minutes after, what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Are we on the verge of this ghetto civil war becoming everyone's problem? What if you're a black or brown mom in central Brooklyn or the South Bronx? And the summer is coming and your son doesn't have a job and you're worried about the gang making moves on him and making him feel, oh, you know, come on, be a cool guy, be on the inside, be an in-crowder. You can carry this gun for the big guy. Don't worry about it. You carry the gun. You're not going to get stopped and frisked. I mean, he might, but you won't, you 16-year-old. Then the kid gets stopped. The kid gets sent up the river, and his life is over effectively. What's going on here, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, kumbaya is great. Real world doesn't work that way.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
24 minutes after 10 o'clock, we are tracking this this pending demonstration at City Hall, where you have largely African-American demonstrators protesting against the end of stop and frisk and similar aggressive police tactics, even as homicides have ticked up, gun homicides from 69 in 2014 up in from January to May. There were 69 in 2014, 98 from January to May this year. So it's a dramatic increase. 98 this year, 69 last year. Let me go. Before we get back to the gun thing, here's Dominic. Dominic, you had something to say about one of us?
Yes, about Noam.
What about him? Do you like his hair or
well,
what?
I think that Noam is in a fairy tale land. He is in the security of his studio. He's in the security of his home where he lives. He has absolutely no idea what's going on in the streets. And his although I respect the man, his liberal views have gotten the better of him and makes him think that everybody's good out there and the police are being violent. And it's not true.
You think that Noam's insistence that stop and frisk is too intrusive is off base?
Well, I think it's off base. Look, Geraldo, I was born and raised in the Bronx. Right off Jerome Avenue. You're a street guy yourself.
So I worked Alexander's on 3rd Avenue.
Well, I worked in Alexander's in the 70s and 80s. Noam has absolutely no clue.
All right, let's let Mr. Layden respond.
I don't think you know me. I don't know if we've ever met before, but I've worked both in the streets. But also, I can tell you that I can just tell you from talking to people during the height of stop and frisk about what it was doing to members of the community. And I can only report back what I've heard and some of what I've seen. No, I don't live in those communities. I grew up in a community very similar to those. In Trenton, New Jersey.
Don't be defensive. I'm not. Dominic saying this.
I understand that. I'm just suggesting that I think sometimes we go for the easy fix. And while it worked, I think
for 20 years,
it's worked for 20 years. But an entire community took a hit for the rest of us over those 20 years.
But if you
and
do
what
this,
it does for the morale.
Do this, okay, Dominic? Hold on. I'm going to be on your side, Dominic. One second. So if you had 2,000 deaths in 20 years ago. And now you have 300. Right. That's 1,700.
Right.
1,700. Right. Hold it a second. 1,700. So that's been 20 years times two. So it's 0, 0, 0, 14, carry one, 34. So I make it that 34,000 young black lives have been saved since stop and frisk 20 years ago. A young black and brown lives.
How do you come up with that?
1,700.
Right.
You have 2,000 were being killed. Now you have 300 being killed. So that's 1,700 a year times 20 years it's been there. That's 34,000 have been saved as a result of stop and frisk.
Right, but 90% of the people that have been stopped by, I don't have the numbers in front of me. When we were really arguing about this 4 years ago, I had this all memorized. But 90% of New Yorkers who have been stopped by police during the stop and frisk days were either African American or Latino. Only
10% of them. Person is only 21 times more likely to be shot in New York than a white person.
But those numbers don't jive. And then 10% of them were found to have anything on them.
True.
So 90% of the people who were stopped were people, innocent people, who were just trying to get to work, trying to get to the subway, trying to go to school. And I go back to that Bales Bondman. He illustrated it better than I can because I'm a white guy. He was up in Harlem. He's just working his Bales Bonds business, and he's thrown against a car for doing nothing wrong except maybe looking the wrong
way,
wearing the wrong clothes, wearing dreadlocks.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't believe you don't find a problem with that.
Here's Richard in the Bronx.
Hey, how's it going, Geraldo?
Good. So what's on your mind, buddy?
African-American. Well, I'm on 33rd Avenue right now on 149th Street.
Right where my old store used to be, right exactly
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I called you about a year ago when Bellagio got elected, and I said, you know what? We're headed towards Chicago. Look at Chicago. Who runs Chicago? Who runs Baltimore? These liberal policies get people killed in certain communities. If you're a white guy living in a white neighborhood, you know, it's all great. But when you come into this neighborhood, I can tell you right now, people are being killed. These are lives. These are young people being killed. So you know what? It doesn't feel good when the cops are tossing you or searching you. I know it hurts your feelings. Well, you know what? A bullet will kill you.
So, Richie, tell me about yourself. What kind of business are you in?
Still in the security business. I work in East New York. We have I work in the real estate. It's property. It's affordable housing.
Did you have a law enforcement background?
Yeah, I'm retired. I'm retired NYPD. I'm African American. So I can tell everybody right now, this is something you're not going to be able to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. You can't keep playing with this stuff.
Richard, thanks for the call.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
37 minutes after 10 o'clock. Whoa, what was that? 37 minutes after 10 o'clock. We're having a real debate here in our studio high above Madison Square Garden. I think we need to bring back stop and frisk. You can take the rough edges off. I think that Ray Kelly had already done that toward the end of the third Bloomberg administration. Stops were way down. They were getting more effective. Now, they are still stopping, obviously, at times, although at a much reduced rate. And the point that Noam made about all the stops that came up empty, they are being more effective now. I think it's from 10%, it's up to 18% in terms of finding something chargeable on the person being stopped, questioned, and frisked. But I think that that Noam is being somewhat naive. I love the guy. He's my sidekick.
0.2% of the time, right? 0.2% of the time that they stop somebody looking for a gun, that's how often they found a gun. 0.2%.
Walking nearby.
Yeah, they made millions of stops over the last few years. Millions, not hundreds of thousands, not tens of thousands, millions of stops over the years of innocent people who had done nothing wrong except walking down
walking
the
nearby. Bo Deedle heard Noam's protestation and he stopped in spontaneously. I have another special guest standing by, but Bo, do you want to respond to our dear colleague?
Well, you know, I think Noam lives in fantasy land, and the fact of the matter...
Jersey City.
That's not fantasy land.
Like I said, you know what? In reality, we have such a rash, and this is only a small potential amount of recorded shootings. You had like 100-and-something shootings last month, but there's so many that go without being recorded, so there's a lot more bullets flying. Now, I got one question, Noam. If one of those 2% was a gun that would effectively kill a member of your family in a straight shot, listen to me, please. The 1 or 2%, whatever you want to say, we're taking guns off the street that are potential killers of our African-American youths in our inner cities, which are being decimated by these shootings. You know, we have the woman with the scale.
Mm-hmm.
It comes a time when things get so outrageously on one side that you have to even it out. I agree with you. You have to fine tune stop and frisk. 700,000 was a little too many, maybe. You bring it down. You bring it down to real. Let the cops understand. Get old gun hunters like Bo Deedle, and there's a lot of other detectives out there that know how to identify someone when they're favoring a gun on the hip, the one leg of their pants is longer. You know when someone's carrying, and the way that they're acting. All right, if it's going to be an illegal search and it's going to get thrown out in court, which I'm not here as a judge, but at least we get that gun off the street. We got to get these guns off the street that are killing our African-American, mostly in our inner cities. And if you think that I'm wrong, then you know what? The next family, I'd like to go to the funeral with you, and you could say why you believe that they shouldn't be stopping first.
I've been at some of those funerals, and okay. I don't disagree with you. Absolutely, anytime you take a gun off the street, that's
a
huge...
We were at Brian Moore's funeral, both of us.
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
He took two shots in the face.
Yeah, no, of course.
For a young youth that possibly could have been shot
by
this punk.
No doubt. And when you say...
All right, Noam response, and then I've gone to a special
guest. And when you say, when I hear that you want to refine the way stop and frisk is done, that's what I'd like to hear. But in the meantime, what they were doing over the last 10, 20 years was disenfranchising the African-American community. And when you talk about police-African-American relations in this country, and then you talk about stopping frisk, you see why the heads are butting.
Right. If you're talking about 95%, Norm, 95% black-on-black crime in the inner city.
No doubt.
So where is the outrage? Where's Sharpton? Where's Jesse Jackson? We should be marching now, and I'll march with you up in Harlem. Bedford-Stuyvesant is being decimated. You have East New York. What are we doing about it? We're just waiting for a confrontation where someone videotapes a cop. Everybody jumps ugly on the cop, so the cops don't want to do
anything.
Don't
you think those ugly stops where they pull somebody who's done nothing wrong adds fuel to the fire?
No deedle now with Noam Layden. They're having an impassioned discussion. We shall continue it on the line with us. I didn't bring him on to talk specifically about stop and frisk or the spike in gun violence, but he certainly is someone who has been campaigning against the excessive number of guns in this country, a gun for every man, woman, and child in America. He was the host, a longtime host on his own primetime program on CNN. Now he's editor at large at Daily Mail, thedailymail.com. Terrific news site. Piers Morgan joins us. Piers, thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun working with you on Celebrity Apprentice. I don't know what your position is on stop and frisk, what your position is on the spike in gun violence in cities like this one, or more egregiously, Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. What are you thinking, Piers?
Well, it's an interesting debate, and I've been listening to both sides there with great interest, because it's not easy, and there clearly has been a lot of tension between the African-American communities in many cities in America and the police. But I also have a lot of sympathy with the police, who've now been told to stand down from stop and frisk in New York, and then they see an immediate spike in the amount of shootings, the amount of people carrying guns, the amount of people dying. And in the end, I think the one thing that everyone needs to agree on in America in relation to the gun debate is that the number of people getting shot in America on a daily basis, everywhere in America, has got to come down, and the volume of guns in general circulation, legal and illegal, has also got to come down, because there is a direct correlation, I can tell you, in countries like, which have had, by the way, centuries of gun violence history. So let's look at Germany, let's look at Great Britain, let's look at Australia, look at Japan. You wouldn't find four countries which had histories more steeped in gun violence, and yet none of them now have any gun culture, and very few civilians have any access to guns, let alone the ability to use them. And to me, it seems in America, I saw Vince Vaughn popping up in a GQ interview, and basically seemed to be endorsing everyone in America carrying guns at all times.
He says it right here. He says, I have his quote right here, "We have the right to bear arms to resist the supreme power of a corrupt and abusive government."
Right. I mean, let's take this to its logical extension. Two parts of that argument. One would be this, which is, in some of the polls I've seen, 35% of Americans genuinely believe and have a fear that their government will turn on them and come and take away their guns. Let's assume for one moment that happens. Let's assume Barack Obama wakes up one day and says he wants to attack his own people. He has the United States Marine Corps. He also has 5,000 nuclear warheads. So he's probably going to win if that ever happens. Just to throw that out there as a hypothetical scenario, he's likely to win that fight. Secondly, let's look at the reality of what has happened with guns in America. Since I've been here in the last 10 years, there have been a massive increase in the number of mass shootings, a massive increase in the number of shootings in and around colleges and schools, over 100 shootings at colleges and schools in America since Sandy Hook alone. Now, by comparison, it's only because it happens to be a country that I come from, and it happens to be an issue in which I was heavily involved in the mid-90s. We had a mass shooting in Scotland, in Dunblane. The tennis star, Andy Murray, was in the school at the time it happened. And 16 kids got shot dead by a lone gunman, very similar to Sandy Hook. And Britain, within 18 months, banned all guns. Literally, you have to get a special permit now to have any type of firearm. And two things have happened. There hasn't been a school shooting in Britain since that day, not one. And secondly, we average 32 to 35 gun murders a year, and America has more than that per day. Now, at some point, for all the pontificating of Vince Vaughn and others about the need to return to the Wild West and everyone walking around American cities packed with heat, doesn't the penny of common sense have to drop and say enough, that actually 100,000 people in America a year being hit by gunfire
of whom 32,000 die, 18,000 suicide, 11,000, 12,000 from murder, that these figures are so out of kilter with any other civilized, wealthy country in the world that America has to look at itself and ask one question. What would the founding fathers have done today if they had to deal with this problem?
Well, they probably would not. They would rewrite the Second Amendment.
That's administration.
They would rewrite the Second Amendment, which I think is the dumbest part of the whole Constitution of the United States. I've got to take a break. Piers Morgan, thank you. Can you stick around, Bo Deedle?
Yeah, I got to stick around.
I got to stick around. You can respond to, on guns if you want. I know I saw your eyeballs rolling around as Piers was talking. Piers paid a dear personal and professional price for his stance, his courageous stance against America's gun culture, as far as I'm concerned. And I welcome him here on this program anytime he wants to come on. Piers, thanks.
Thank you.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Welcome back. 54 minutes after 10 o'clock. On this Wednesday, the third day of June, summer just, just over 2 weeks away. Bo Deedle's with Melman and I here in our studio high above Madison Square Garden. We just heard from Piers Morgan, who made an argument about the fact there are too many damn guns in this country. I know a lot of eyes glaze over when you hear that argument. I mean, that whole Second Amendment and this and that. And, you know, every time there's a mass shootings, you hear about too many guns. Bo had an observation, though, that I think rings true during the commercial break. What was it, buddy?
You know what the problem here is, that there's so many millions of legal guns across the country. To try to take them all away, it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
People are not going to give up their weapons and all that. But the real fact are the illegal guns are the ones that
the
are killing.
Illegal guns.
The illegal guns are the ones that are killing. Can we tighten up on a national selling of guns? Absolutely. I believe you should have responsible people buying firearms. You can't have people or criminals buying. Maybe we should look at that aspect for the future. But the streets out, the guns out in the street are killing our kids are illegal guns. And going back to Noam,
almost right.
Okay. Going back to that, again, if your child, God forbid, was one of the ones that got killed by that person with that illegal gun out there, you'd be the first one to say, you know what? I want the guns off the street. We used to have a thing called we toss somebody. Toss somebody means you toss them, you get the gun, you take it off the street. That's what has to happen now. And I'm sorry to all my civil liberty people. There's a way of doing it. And you leave a person, you say, look, we've had a lot of shootings in the street. I'm going to pat you down. No disrespect to you, my brother. I'm patting you down. Look, we got to get the guns off the street. If you got a problem with it, you understand. We just had a four-year-old shot down the street. And you do. You leave them in a good way. You know what you do, too? You have a card with you. Have a card. Give cops cards. And hand the guy a card and say, thanks for cooperating. We're going to work together to get these guns off the street.
A card that says, free pass.
Patted. Your name. The name of the officer.
Like if you get a ticket, you leave it in the window so you don't get another ticket.
Can you wear it that says, I've been patted already?
How about another cop stops you and all of a sudden you have a card where you cooperated with the cop and now you have a different look at a view of that person.
Right. Let me squeeze in a quick one. Ralph, you got 30 seconds. Ralph, what's up?
Hey, the problem is, Bo, it wasn't done that way, Bo. People were thrown up against cars, and then after it was found that they were innocent, they were just sent on their way. They weren't even apologized to. I don't want my rights trampled over. I don't want to be in that position where I have to say, hey, officer, you know, take it a little bit easy on me there. I can sympathize with those who've been...
Maybe everybody that gets stopped and they don't have anything on them, they get like a $20 voucher
Like I say, you should...
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
6 minutes after 11 o'clock, you know, under Mayor Giuliani, and then his successor, Mayor Bloomberg, with Police Commissioner Ray Kelly at the helm there. Tried and true, tough guy approach to keeping our city safe. No tolerance, broken windows approach to policing. They busted folks and still are to a certain extent, but a limited extent. Now, public urination, graffiti, turnstile jumping, so forth. Prosecuted his crimes. Hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers stopped, questioned, and frisked. Obviously, the stops irked a lot of people being inconvenienced, but there is no doubt They kept this city safe. Now, for the second year in a row, gun homicides ticking up. It's a very troubling fact. And if we don't turn things around, our proud distinction of being America's safest big city might be in jeopardy. We suffered 98 homicides by gunfire through May. That's up from 69 homicides during that same period a year ago. What is going on? Does Mayor de Blasio understand that things are slipping back to the bad old days? Mayor Rudy Giuliani joins us right now. We wanted to wish him a happy birthday last week. Couldn't get him. He was traveling. Happy birthday, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Rob.
About these statistics and the defensive response by Mayor de Blasio?
Well, I think the mayor is very wrong to reject the broken windows theory. It's a theory that is tried and true, not just in New York, but it was started by Professor James Q. Wilson of Harvard University, by Brad, and we adopted it. It had worked in Greenfield, North Carolina, four or five other places. And the idea is very, very simple. You can't allow criminal elements to take over your streets. You can't allow crime to run rampant. It doesn't mean you arrest everybody for everything, but it means you don't give people immunity. You don't give people immunity to urinate on the street. You don't give people immunity to put graffiti on property that isn't theirs. That's called vandalism. And if you work on the small things and the big things, you create a lawful society. Young people grow up respecting the law. You know, when they see buses coming through their community that are all scratched up and beaten up, they think their city has no standards. When they see the buses coming through, they look nice. They grow up believing there are standards. There are rules that have to be followed. So broken windows is a very intricate and very, very important theory, and I think it was quite ignorant of those people who attacked it as if it came from me and Bratton. I'd like to let them know it comes from a professor at Harvard.
But what about Stop and Frisk specifically, Mr. Mayor? What about the fact that so many were irked and inconvenienced?
Stop and Frisk got to be too many. Under Bratton and me, Giuliani Safer and Giuliani Carrick, we got up to about 100,000. Mike and Ray took it up to about 600,000. So I can't talk about, you know, 600,000.
That number sounds heavy to you.
I can tell you the 100,000 worked really, really well. Maybe 150,000, 200,000 would be the right number. But I'd like people to look at it this way, right? Every single one of us gets stopped and frisked at the airport. I have five times at least in the last year.
Oh, my God. I got totally felt up on my way to Europe last
summer. Okay. Now, you don't like it, right?
Oh, please. I thought the guy was getting off on it.
Well, you don't get nasty. You don't get angry. And you realize this is being done against a very, very, very small percent chance that somebody's going to blow up your airplane, right? Now, why stopped and frisked in neighborhoods of high crime? To protect against a very high risk that they're going to be shot by a member of their own race.
21 times more likely that a black kid gets shot than a white kid. I think that is such an alarming statistic.
Well, so what I am saying is, if I were a leader in the black community, I would say, like I say to people who get annoyed about TSA, this is a little bit of a necessary price to pay to the enormous amount of crime that we have in our community. And who is benefiting from it but our children who aren't being killed? When I was doing a lot of stop and frisk and took murder down from around, I think it went up, the height under Dinkins was 2,200. I took it down to about 600. Mike took it down to around 350. I mean, think of all the lives I saved. And 70% of those lives were African-American lives.
And yet it seems to me that we're having this discussion now. We're seeing this uptick. We see the obvious. Do you still have that de Blasio soundbite from this morning? Mayor de Blasio acting very defensively. Here, listen, Mayor.
New York City continues to be an extraordinarily safe city. I have a lot of faith in the men and women of the NYPD. I know they will turn the tide this time, just like they did last year.
All right. What about that, Mayor?
Well, the men of the New York and women of the New York City Police Department really don't feel they have a mayor that supports them. Let's be honest. they do not feel they have a mayor who has their back. They are sitting there worried that if they make a mistake, they are going to be pilloried the way some others. And there'll be demands that they be indicted, whether they're guilty or not guilty. That is what is going on in the minds of New York City police officers. You'd have to be on Mars not to figure that out. And not only that, that's going on in the minds of police officers all throughout America. I travel constantly, as you know, and I talk to the police probably more often than anyone else because I have a natural affinity with them. And this is what's going on in the minds of police officers all over America. They believe they're being targeted. They believe that if something goes wrong, there will be an immediate assumption that they are guilty, as was true in the Gardner case with all the lies about his hands being up and his being shot in the back.
Oh, Michael Brown.
Michael Brown, I'm sorry. The Gardner case was the
choco. Yeah.
In Staten Island. But even there, that officer had no chance to have an opportunity to explain his view of things. Police officers are now in a situation where if anything happens, they are presumed guilty. And sometimes they are, but a lot of times they're not, and most of the time they're not. Most police officers do not go out in the morning wanting to hurt people. I said this to a very prominent black leader about 2 weeks ago. I said, if I were to make all the police officers in America, white and black, perfect, would that stop a single murder of a black child by another black child? And he said, no. And he's right.
So what about when you look at Baltimore and what happened there and the fact that there have been 43 murders in that tiny city, you know, 7% the size of this one in the last 30 days, how should that have been handled in Baltimore? What could have been done differently?
Well, Baltimore is a situation I think that's worse than New York. I mean, that mayor and district attorney have completely walked out on the police. And we're talking about we're talking about white on black crime here. We're talking about the police officer, the major defendant in the case is an African American police officer. So this is not just, we're not talking about racism here. We're talking about anti-police, an anti-police attitude. And, I mean, the reality is that if I lived in a high-crime neighborhood where there was a good chance my child might be killed by a child of the same race or ethnic group or whatever, and I had to suffer the indignity of being searched a couple of times when I should, in order to prevent that, I would feel the same way I feel about TSA. I would feel as a responsible adult. I would make the deal with Mayor de Blasio, Mayor Bloomberg, Mayor Giuliani. I'll take a couple of stop and frisks that aren't necessary because I'm going to get a 60% reduction in the number of young people being killed.
Do you think there's a civil war going on in the ghetto?
I think there's a war going on, and I think a lot of them are trying to direct that war, you know, to the police. And the war that's going on is between, unfortunately, large extent, young people who don't have the proper guidance, the proper background, the proper education. I mean, one of the best answers to how to solve the problem of crime is better schools, yet none of these politicians support charter schools. The mayor wanted to do away with charter schools. They don't support choice for parents. They don't support vouchers. They want to cut out money for parochial schools. All the things that help and work, because the teachers' union is more important to them than the community. When the public officials of Baltimore stood up and said, this is because of 40 years of lack of attention, they're the ones who didn't give it the attention. Baltimore has been run by Democrats for 40 years. They're the ones that didn't take care of the schools, take care of the streets, take care of the social centers that are necessary. I rebuilt Harlem. I rebuilt Bedford-Stuyvesant. I didn't just end crime there. I brought businesses in. I brought welfare down by 600,000, put people to work. I didn't just reduce crime. I know it's looked at that way. You look at Harlem the day I came into office and the day I left office, totally different place.
Absolutely true. Mayor, I got to let you go. I appreciate you coming on, buddy.
I would go tell people, I'm
doing this because I love you.
That's the way to do it. Do it with love, but you've got to have a firm hand, too, and absolutely can't be naive about, people are going to suddenly, change. I mean, if it's the Bloods versus the Crips and all that.
They're going to shoot each other unless they're afraid to take their guns out. And when you're stopping them frisking them, they're afraid to take their guns out.
I agree 100%.
I mean, it's just simple as that.
Thanks, Mayor. Gotta go.
Thank you.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
24 minutes after 11 o'clock, in the height of stop and frisk under Ray Kelly, as Mayor Giuliani just told us, there were almost 600,000 stops and frisks. In the first year of the de Blasio administration, there was 145,000. 145,000 first year de Blasio. Let me see. That's because 2014 fell. Oh, they fell by. I see. There's 46,000 now. 46,000 on an annualized basis. 46,000. I think that's too small. But the stops are better. 18% are resulting in an arrest or summons. And the 2013 last year of Bloomberg, it was 12%. So 12% of stops result in an arrest or summons. Now it's up to 18%, but the stops are way down. And you have homicides by gunfire up from 69 in the first year of the de Blasio administration to 98 so far this year. So gun violence definitely on the increase, pressure mounting as it should on Mayor de Blasio to bring back stop and frisk, some modification of it. We have, Bo Deedle here. You want to come in? Are you being disarmed, cops?
No. Let's cut right to the chase on this. Out of the 77 precincts in New York, 10 of them are where 50% of the shootings are. So it's a very simple procedure. And what this way of flooding the area there with cops and taking the guns off. You'll have more stop and frisk if you're having more shootings. If there was no shootings, the stop and frisk should go down. I agree with that. But once you start getting shootings in these certain neighborhoods, you've got to flood the area and you've got to go out there and you got to get those guns off the street.
And be proactive. So, Rockland, here's James. James, thanks for holding on. Thanks for calling 866 or other. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. To me, it's almost a joke. You know, you're creating second-class citizens. You're saying, now all of a sudden, everybody cares about the black community. All people are dying. And it, this isn't a personal attack against any of you guys. But it's like when crack was being, cocaine was being flown in from Colombia, and heroin was being flown in from Afghanistan or wherever else it comes from.
Vietnam in the early days, when you're talking the 80s.
Yeah, well, even now, you know, the drugs are being flown in from all over the world and pumped into our community. And then people, they want to sit there and point the finger at the easy target and say, oh, it's these guys.
How do you deal with it? How can you, if you don't talk about, all right, Bo says 10 precincts, Bratton says 15 precincts. Those 15 precincts are heavily African-American and a couple of them heavily Latino in the South Bronx. How can you not have a racial context when I said 21? It's 25 times. If you are black in New York City, you're almost 25 times more likely to be shot than a white person. Is that a racial statement, James?
No. Well, statistics could be played with, we have a high crime area. We're a tough area to police, but I believe in the slippery slope. I've had conversations with you about the Second Amendment. I'm a firm believer in people have the right to defend themselves. They shouldn't have to depend on police officers to come and defend their families when they have the ability with the Second Amendment. The same thing with stop and frisk.
But you're the commissioner. I'm making you the commissioner. You're the commissioner, James. I just gave you that job. Now you see an uptick in gun violence. What are you going to do about it?
Well, first you have to follow the Constitution. As a police commissioner, would I like to have all of the power in the world and say, yes, I should be able to come into your house because it's a crime?
We're not talking about coming into people's homes here. Let's be clear.
That's like we're talking about crime, and we're saying, being that it's so much crime, we should be able to do this. We should be able to do that. So I'm saying, where do you draw the line? Is it going to be next? All right, well, it's a high crime area. We should be able to come into your house and search your house if we want to. It's a slippery slope. Where do you stop? Where do you draw the line? What's next?
I think reasonable suspicion is it, and I really do believe you're going to see some cops are going to just get they won't be able to handle it. James, excellent call. Some cops will be overly aggressive, and they'll be the commander will see that in a heartbeat. The sergeant will know who's being intrusive and rude and who's being professional. I mean,
look, we have a civilian complaint review board.
Very hyperactive.
But I tell everybody, you know, if you don't like what a cop's doing or saying, you make a civilian complaint. You don't argue with a cop. You don't say no. If he's going to arrest you, you go along with it. And you know what? If you're not being arrested for the right reason, you have alternatives for it. You don't fight with a person in uniform. You don't fight with a cop. That's the biggest problem. And the disrespect that has been put out there against cops is only causing this thing to skyrocket.
Noam, would you not stop and frisk if you were commissioner?
No, I think I would do it very differently. 600,000, the mayor said it himself. Mayor Giuliani
was too many.
Was way too many.
Is 45,000 enough?
Well, maybe not enough. But if it's targeted, I think it may work, but not the way with 600,000.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
This is the most important New York story you can possibly imagine. You have an uptick in gun homicides in this city. A dramatic increase. Mayor de Blasio says, no big deal. But they are sending extra cops to these troubled neighborhoods. What would you do? How do you do it? How do you fix it? How do you balance civil rights? You want people to feel that the cops are their friends, not their enemies. And yet you have this unprecedented spike in gun violence, reversing years of decline. You have 2 years in a row where gun homicides are up. How do you stop that trend? How do you nip that before it becomes an epidemic and we become a city in the sewer, as Baltimore is in the sewer, and Detroit and Cleveland and parts of Chicago, undeniably? How do you stop it? What the hell is going on? Is there a ghetto civil war? Is there a gang war going on there? What is going on? Let me go to Carl in New Jersey. Thank you, Carl, for calling. What's on your mind, buddy?
Hello?
Hi, Carl. You're on. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hey, Geraldo. How you doing? This is Paul. This is the biggest problem, man. This is what's going on in the hood. The reason why there's a lot of guns on the street is because people don't have jobs. Now, before you cut me off, just hear me out. Somebody like myself, I got in trouble when I was a little bit younger, right? But I was fortunate. I was able to get my CDL and get away from the street life because I'm making close to $1,000 a week, which isn't a lot of money, but it's a lot more money than I was getting. These guys can't get jobs because they got in trouble in the past. So when they go apply for it, I don't care how small the job is, the background check, and the jobs won't hire them. And so when you go through that cycle, you keep getting told no, you can't get a job that pays $10 an hour. People give up on life. They just say to themselves, there's nothing else I can do but the hood. And the crazy thing is, a lot of these people, when they're on their way home from jail, instead of having the family welcoming them with open arms, they have the neighborhood welcome them with packs, with drug packs. Like, hey, man, I can't give you a job, but I can help you make some money. And what would you do in that situation? A lot of these people got kids, they got families, households, and along with the drugs comes the guns. You understand what I'm saying?
I absolutely do. So how do you fix it, Carl? Help me out here.
I didn't hear you say that again.
Help us out. How do you fix it?
I think some of these crimes, not all crimes, but some of these crimes shouldn't be that, like, you know what I mean? Like, for instance, say I was 18 years old, right? And I got caught pinched with a little bit of drugs. And I had a drug charge that follows me now. I'm 35 now, married with two kids. You understand my point? So it's like it keeps following you for the rest of your life. Some of these crimes shouldn't be, this should be like a time limit on, depending on the severity of the crime. This should be
I think if it's a nonviolent drug offense, you're absolutely right. And don't be a stranger. I appreciate your expertise. Thank you very much for calling. And good luck. And I hope you can stay, you know, you say you straighten your life out. I hope that's true. And I hope you can keep it that way, man. I appreciate it. Call me anytime. All right, here is Neil in New York. What's up, Neil?
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo? Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
All right, so before I talk about my point, Carl, the gentleman who just spoke before, he makes a lot of valid points, and I agree with him 100%. I'm a retired New York City police lieutenant and now practice law. So he does make a lot of sense. But so a couple of important things. Number one, it's undeniably that it has to be instilled at a young age. So the bottom line is, first and foremost, the young black men have to basically, you know, when they become fathers, they have to stay with the family. Everything, you know, you spoke about this the last bunch of days. It all starts with a mother, a father in the home disciplining the child, because even where I live in some fancy town in Jersey, if I'm not around and I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, my wife works full-time, if the parents aren't in the home to take care of the kids and watch the kids, especially in these lower socioeconomic areas, the kids are going to run wild, and it's just right. So right from the get-go, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, they're at a disadvantage. So it's just a major problem. So first, let's start by young girls not getting pregnant and the father staying in the home. That's the first.
I'm into that. I agree. That's the beginning and end of everything.
Thank you. The second thing I really want to say, which is critical, is that when I did 20 years on the job, myself and all the cops I work with, we all unanimously agreed that if we went out to the streets and we effected arrests, whatever we did, if we did it in good faith, we always knew for a fact or with high certainty that we would be indemnified by the city. So basically, you go out there, you stop and frisk. As long as you basically didn't have a criminal intent or a criminal mind to engage in criminal behavior, we knew that the city was going to back us and we wouldn't lose our pension, we won't go to jail, et cetera, et cetera. So right now, it's exactly the opposite. It starts from the president. I don't want to go on to all the things that he said, but the police acted stupidly. Not only that, but look at the Brown situation where basically his hands up, don't shoot thing. So let's forget about the average layperson who's maybe not super intelligent in the street. Let's talk about all the congressmen, all the major basketball players, all people who are very influential putting their hands up in the chambers of the Senate and the House of Representatives with this hands up, don't shoot mantra. And these are attorneys and intelligent people. Before the facts even get out, this is what these idiots are doing there. And now with the tone of the city.
But wait, you didn't give the punchline that hands up, don't shoot never happened.
Exactly. So think about how scary this is. The tone is the hands up, don't shoot never happened. But before all the facts get out, you have Congress people that are supposed to be highly regarded and respected. These people are look what they're doing. So what do you expect the average person or minority in the street to follow? You would expect them to follow along. Then with the mayor, the bottom line is, even if in these small areas, these five precincts that Bo was talking about, where the shootings are all happening, so you come up with some modified stop, question, don't frisk, stop, question, frisk in those areas, you're going to still have a bunch of cops who are kind of going to, you know, go out there and do things, hopefully with a good boss. But the fact is, you know, I can't give numbers, 5 out of 10, 6. Don't forget, not every cop becomes a cop simply because they want to be a crime fighter, okay? Now, you know, that maybe was years ago. Nowadays, it's economics, it's a pension, it's vacation, it's a good job. But not every, you know, after a year, 2 or 3, young cops get burnt out. And the bottom line is, if they know that the city's not going to indemnify them, they're not going to be proactive. They're not going to go out there. They're going to answer the radio runs. They're not going to go out there basically tossing people and coming over guns. And you know who's going to suffer? We all know. The beautiful, loving, kind, amazing people who are minorities who live in these communities. They're the people that are going to suffer. They're the innocent, the drive-by shootings. They can't leave their house. And it's just a horrible thing. And I'll be honest with you, this is not going away. Just like ISIS is not going away. No, this is not going away. This is going to be here for a long time. Trust me.
Lieutenant, thanks for your service, and I appreciate your call. Very smart and very thoughtful. And I appreciate it. Thank you. All right, that's Neil. Here's Tony. What are you thinking about, Tony?
Yeah, Geraldo, I was listening to the last two people. The guy, Carl, he was making too many excuses for us. I'm a black person. I've written a book. I'm not going to talk about what it is. You can talk to your man who let me on. He'll give you all the information on that. I wrote a book that was published in 814. It says almost all the same things that you say. We need a new civil rights. We need a civil rights which tell parents to train their children and spend a lot of time telling their black kids what to do, like staying out of crime, going to school, getting an education. Nobody's giving no kids no jobs that drop out of school at 9th and 10th grade, who not even 9th, 10th grade are competent. And also all this, we got to kill each other. Why we got to kill each other all the time? And I like Tony Herbert you had on earlier, except for one thing, he's talking about these community centers. The hell with some community centers. Tell these kids they got something to do. go to school and learn something, get an education so they can make some money. Nobody's just going to give everybody everything. And one of our greatest things that is wrong with us is that we want to be victims of everybody, and everything is racism. I don't agree with too much of anything that Al Sharpton says. And if he wants to be a real civil rights leader, he should then try to talk about civil rights that will help us. The stuff that Dr. King talked about got rid of a whole lot of that stuff he's talking about now, and he just wants to go out and tell people to protest and get in the way of everybody. I mean, that's a lot of nonsense. And like I said, talk to your man, and he'll tell
about
you name,
about your book. I will, Tony. I think you're really a wise person, and I'm sure your book is excellent.
You know Warren Williams?
Well, of course.
Warren Williams has written me a letter saying, I have written a book that could help a lot of people. So I won't talk about the book because I didn't call on to
it. What's it called? People could look it up. What's it called?
It's called Pathway to a Legacy of Dignity.
Pathway to the Legacy of Dignity.
And it has a subtitle, An Open Letter to African Americans.
I like it, Tony. Thank you very much for your call.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo, 77 WABC.
6 minutes to high noon. Noam Layden, have we heard from Tony Herbert and that demonstration down at City Hall?
It's going on as we speak. A large crew of cameras from the local news stations following him as he's rolling this coffin. It's a wooden coffin, a big one, onto the City Hall property. And then the rally is going to begin afterwards, but he's creating quite a buzz downtown. Lots of cameras flashing, lots of TV cameras following him.
I think that, you know, obviously it's a stunt to bring a coffin, but you have to admit it's a pretty effective stunt. As stunts go, it makes the message so vivid that the community, now I don't know how powerful or popular Tony Herbert is. Do you have a sense of, does he have a following? I know he's not like Reverend Sharpton, who's got probably the biggest following of anyone in New York, including Bill de Blasio, but how effective is Tony?
Oh, I think he's a rising star in that community. And for the media, from the media side, he's the go-to guy in some ways, number two or number three go-to guy when it comes to community activism, the shootings on the street. That's the person you want to talk to.
Joseph, in New Jersey, you're on 5866.
Geraldo, how are you? Geraldo, the point is really this. There's a short-term problem and a long-term problem. The long-term solution is obviously employment, education, the family structure. The short-term situation is the National Guard. There's an underclass that Senator Moynihan identified 30 years ago. It's about 1% of the population. They're high school dropouts. They have a criminal record. They're not interested, and they're only basically interested in causing problems. What you have to do as quickly as possible is get the National Guard involved in certain neighborhoods. They should start patrolling.
I don't think we need the National Guard. You need a police force that is unshackled.
We used to have 40,000
cops. We used to have 40,000 cops in this town. Now we have 34,000 cops. You know, and you know, everybody but Mayor de Blasio wants 1,000 more cops. The left liberals on the city council, the police commissioner and the management, you know, on the other side of the political spectrum, they all want 1,000 more cops. Bill de Blasio says, no, he doesn't want 1,000 more cops. You know, you can have great intentions. And again, I don't question anybody's motive. But where the rubber meets the road, you've got to be practical. I'm a pragmatic idealist. I want the city to be as safe as it was in the last year of the Bloomberg administration. Going forward for my children and your children. Thanks for listening, everybody, and great calls. We'll see you right here tomorrow.